Welcome back to the Real Arsenal Deal podcast. This is your host, Rav. How are you all today? Wherever you are in the world, welcome. Hope you are well. It's a few hours now since the final whistle in Arsenal's flat 2-2 draw with Palace at the Emirates. I was debating, do I record? Should I? Shouldn't I not? It's not going to be a great upbeat podcast that I usually pride myself on. Maybe it mirrors the actual match itself, going through the motions a little bit. But I'll still do my absolute best to try and to summarise what I saw out there on the pitch this morning and just try and give a little bit of context because, look, context is needed on this match for both teams, really. You saw it with the intensity that both sides produced in that first half. I've heard it described as something you would see more similar in like a pre-season friendly match, right? That the teams do on promotional tours around the globe, and that really struck with me. It was that type of intensity and that type of atmosphere. It was almost as if, I say this jokingly, of course. I mean, they're professional footballers, they're professional athletes. Once the whistle blows and you're out there, you want to win everything, right? So I'm saying this in jest, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if Palace fans had a similar feeling to Arsenal that, can we just call time on this match? Can we just have a gentleman's agreement that no one goes in and sky someone down? No risk of injuries. Let's just play the match, play the 90 minutes, because you've got a semi-final to look forward to. We got a semi-final to look forward to in the Champions League next week. Palace have the FA Cup this weekend. Do they have a shorter turnaround than us? And it's almost as if to say, look, can we just get this game done and have no injuries and no fallout from it, and off we go. Let's just all go home. It did have that kind of feel and vibe to it. And also, even in the crowd, you could notice it was noticeable in the atmosphere as well, of course. And there were a lot of empty seats as the game wore on. And look, there's absolutely no judgment from me. I totally understand. Cost of living is huge. Tickets are damn expensive. It's a weeknight, right? All these things factor in. Many fans would be also expending big bucks on these seats as the season gets deeper and deeper. Champions League semi-final, of course, to look forward to next week. That's going to be one of the hottest tickets in town, as it was for Real Madrid. So, you know, you have to pick and choose. You have to pick and choose which ones, you know, if we could all afford to do all of it, in terms of our financial position, then I'm sure we would. But situations like this, you need to be a bit judicious. So I totally understand that aspect as well. And it was reflected in the stands. It was reflected on the pitch. It was just a very strange game to get a full read of, given the circumstances for both teams. So whilst this draw in its own is not the end of the world, I do think if you were to encapsulate Arsenal's Premier League season, you can really summarize it. In this match, it really brought issues to the fore that we are struggling to keep clean sheets at home. Just far too many goals conceded at home, and that's without even addressing the fact that just some of the goals that we can see, they're just moments of just what the hell just happened there. Like, they're sometimes out of nowhere. They're completely inconsistent with the tempo of the match and the control and the dominance that we otherwise are demonstrating. And sometimes, so often, a team goes up the other end and out of nowhere, just a shot on target and it goes in. So there's a host of reasons for our league form. And in today's match, this morning's match, what really struck me was some of the statistics I read post-match, that this was Arsenal's 13th draw overall of the season. That's just far, far too many draws. I think we all know that anyway. Like, we've known that we are just drawing too many matches. We are failing to kill teams off, find that elusive second goal in so many 1-1 draws or 0-0 draws. We just need that one elusive goal that everyone knows what we're trying to address this summer, right? We need that killer. We need that killer centre forward. We are aware, and I'm very confident we're going to address it, of course. However, there's a bit more to it than just saying, hey, let's just splash big cash on a striker, because systemically, Arsenal are not closing out matches. It's not just a failure at the other end to get a key goal. It is just losing focus, losing our tempo in key moments in second halves. the most damning stat of the 13 draws overall in the Premier League, 9 of them have been from winning positions. I didn't know it was that bad. Obviously, I know that throughout the season we've been ahead in some very key fixtures, and we've in the second half we've been outdone, outplayed, or just imploded at the back, or something like that, and we've dropped points from winning positions. I didn't realize it was 9 draws from winning positions. That's 18 points, 18 Premier League points from winning positions. Oof. That stings. It hurts. And even though we largely know that the title is inevitable now for Liverpool, I actually believe, from what I understand, that all they need is a draw now this weekend against Spurs, which will be funny, of course, to win it against them. But anyway, a victory here would not have changed that dynamic. However, it's still we've just fizzled out. We've just fizzled out this last 6 weeks. Or so, when there still was a genuine chance to have a tilt at the Premier League. So I'm well aware that life doesn't work this way and football doesn't work this way. We can't just automatically say, oh, why don't we just change those 18 drop points into 18 points that we won, and look, we would have won the league. Now, I know it's not that easy, right? And I don't want to discredit Liverpool as well, because they are deserving champions. That they will win the Premier League deservedly this season, right? So I know I'm not trying to be that simplistic. However, even if you just hone in on that for a moment, of those 9 draws, the 18 drop points, even if you just say half of them, right, if we had that finishing touch, that killer instinct to go ahead and see that victory through, right, all of a sudden you take those extra 9 points. Now, noting one of them was actually against Liverpool at the Emirates earlier in the season, where we found ourselves, you know, Saliba had the red card from the denying goal scoring opportunity the match before. We had an injury mid-match to Gabriel, which was massive. So all of a sudden we were fielding a back four for the last 15 minutes or so. Partey right back, Ben White was pushed inside to centre half next to Kiwior, and Lewis Skelly came on as well at left back. It's a back four that I think many said we'd never seen before, and quite likely you won't see that back four again ever take the field for Arsenal. And credit to Liverpool, they capitalised, right? They capitalised and they equalised, took away a point. So just hypothetically, right, there's a number of what-ifs for Arsenal to ponder about as we head into summer and plan for next season. I'm just going to have a brief moment of just hypothetically thinking that even if we could account for 9 of those 9 points to secure, right, two of which would have turned into a victory had we seen that match off against Liverpool. That's one less point for them, of course, because in equalising they earned themselves a point at the Emirates. And all of a sudden, that league table, right, that gap they've got, that 10, 11 point gap or whatever it is now, all of a sudden the dynamics are completely changed. It's just one of those great what ifs. And it is what it is, right? Like I said, football isn't that simplistic. If it was, then we'd win everything, right? If it was as simple as me saying, oh, let's just do this, this and that, and change the equation, right, then we'd win every trophy possible. But it's not. Life doesn't work that way. Football doesn't work that way, unfortunately. So it's just one of those things for Arsenal that's plagued us throughout the season. And yes, I know some of you listening may be saying, like, you know, how come I haven't mentioned things such as the refereeing decisions, those ridiculous delaying the restart, red cards earlier in the season. Those were crucial. We were in total control against Brighton, total control against City at the Etihad. We also had that, I've never seen a penalty given again against Brighton, actually. The Saliba head clash, I've never seen a penalty given for that, right? So I'm not saying it is just purely down to Arsenal's failures, right? There have been key contributing factors, very, very valid reasons, from everything from injuries to officiating decisions to our lack of just focus at times and switching off. So there's a host of reasons, a host of contributing factors. So I'm not saying it's just that. I know there are very, very other valid reasons too. But overall, when you fast forward now to just a handful of games left in the Premier League season, this is where we sit. This is where it's currently at. So Liverpool, credit to them. All they need is 1 point this weekend against Spurs and they'll be crowned champions. And in a way, I'm just hoping it just gets done. Like, can we just have it done now, so it's no longer lingering over our heads? I know broadcasters and pundits and stuff, that, you know, they're paid to obviously keep the interest going, but I'm just sick of seeing graphics about, like, you know, the remaining fixtures, the running, you know, what do Arsenal need to do? Like, come on, like, we've known it's been done for a little while. I think internally within the club, we've known that too. So the title challenge, the title race, it fizzled out quite some time ago, about a month or so ago, with some, but there was a loss to West Ham, and then we failed to win against an awful United team. And yeah, you just kind of knew it's just not happening. So we are where we are. Okay, so it's a 2-2 draw. So I'll just try and cover some key points from the match itself. I thought selection was largely hindered again from injuries, from unforeseen absences. No White or Marino at all in the squad today. So I'm not sure what's happened. Maybe it's illness or a bug or a knock in training or something. Hopefully it's not too serious. I mean, Arteta's not going to reveal much, is he? He's going to keep his cards close to the chest. 6-day break now until the PSG semi-finals. So hopefully that works in our favour, not having a match this weekend and just the extra time to rest and recuperate. However, look, you know, there's flow-on effects to that. All of a sudden, just on in the last week or so, when we've got some players back in the squad against Ipswich, and I looked at the bench, and I think, wow, we're actually close to filling out that bench again with senior squad members. And look, this is, take nothing away from the youth players who we name on the substitutes bench to fill out the squad. But largely speaking, though, and I think I can say this just realistically, some of them are there just to, you know, obviously make up the numbers. I don't believe they're genuine, realistic chances of getting on the pitch and trying to change the match. So just when I thought, wow, all of a sudden we got some key numbers on the bench, you know, so much so that we didn't even need Partey at all on the weekend to come on in that 4-0 win over Ipswich. So then all of a sudden you take out a couple of other squad members. You take out Marino completely, take out White, then we have to start Timber again, who's done, he's had an outstanding season. We probably don't talk about it enough, do we? Off the back of an ACL injury, right? Like an extraordinarily significant injury that has a long recovery time, for him to play the volume of minutes at the level he has this season, it's just outstanding. Full testament, full credit to him. Absolutely outstanding. We had no choice but to play him. And then we also need to start the likes of Rice, Odegaard, Sterling got a start again, and just didn't do that much as expected. And it's just one of those things now, right? I think we've all made peace with the Sterling transaction. However, in signing him, like you need him to absorb minutes from the likes of Saka and Martinelli or so. And Martinelli's played a lot of minutes lately, and we need some squad protection as well, some rotation. But once again, like I started this point with, you take out some key senior members from the squad and you look at that bench and we'll light on for options. So Arteta has to play out of necessity, has to play a number of these players. So just off the top of my head, imagine that bench looking different with the likes of, in no particular order, Havertz, Gabriel Jesus, White, Marino. I'm certainly forgetting some of Tomiyasu. My goodness, we barely talk about Tomiyasu as well, because we've just adjusted. We've been accustomed to his absence from his long-term injury all season, basically. He's not even really appearing in the back of our minds. But you look at a match like this, when you've got, like I mentioned, you've got White completely out of the squad and Timber needed, you know, potentially next in line for a bit of rest and rotation. Tomiyasu is a perfect, absolute perfect squad player, because he can play across the entire back four. We've seen him do fantastic jobs at left back. I remember that match a couple of seasons ago where he had Salah in his pocket when Arteta deliberately moved him to the left back to negate Salah cutting in onto his left foot, as he always does. He's a weapon when he does that. And Tomiyasu, being a right footer playing left back, he had him in his pocket. So what a brilliantly versatile footballer to have in your squad that can just come in and fill any of those positions. I can't believe I didn't even mention Calafiori missing from the squad. And of course, Gabriel. I'm almost about to give myself an uppercut. How did I forget them? So my apologies. If you were screaming into your headphones listening to this, thinking, how could I forget them? But all of a sudden, what's that? Seven, six, seven, eight key senior members. All of a sudden, imagine they're in your squad. Imagine they're on the bench. Absolute game changers to have. And if anything, and I know no one wants to hear this, and this is of little comfort to most, and I totally understand why. It really is remarkable in some ways that Arsenal remain second, right? Despite all their injuries, all their absences, sometimes we take one step forward and take two back. And it's just clear that the focus, the priority now is entirely on the Champions League. All of our chips are now in that basket, and I'm hoping we can do something special next week. But just to round off my point about squad selection, it was largely necessitated again by the injuries and absences. So it's just unfortunate we find ourselves where we are, and this very much needs to be taken into account as we build a squad capable of challenging on multiple fronts next season. Because here's the thing, here's a key point. At this point of the season, we're mid-late April. If you were to ask Arteta which competition does he want to win, he would say all of them. A club of Arsenal's size and stature and what we are trying to build and develop ourselves back into is a club as an institution that wins multiple trophies or at least challenges multiple trophies. So hypothetically, fast forward 12 months, I would love to be in a position where it's us playing a FA Cup semi-final on the weekend. It's us also playing this morning midweek a league match of significant importance, either trying to extend our lead at the top or if we're within, you know, a couple of points of whoever we're challenging with at the time to a much needed victory to win 3 points and go back to the top of the table. In addition to a Champions League semi-final next week. So all of a sudden, sometimes seasons come down to moments. Seasons come down to a block of 1 week, 7 to 10 days, where it can be all or nothing sometimes, right? And I mean this with absolute genuine sincerity. Do we think that this current Arsenal squad is built for winning a key Premier League match this morning, then in 3 days' time, doing it again in a cutthroat FA Cup semi-final, and then in 3 to 4 days' time, next Tuesday night or next Wednesday night, facing off against one of the biggest teams in Europe in a Champions League semi-final? Do we honestly think that we are there yet in terms of squad building, fitness, intensity, all of that stuff that is essential to winning multiple trophies? I just don't think we're there yet. And in fact, just the prospect of that with the host of injuries I already mentioned, that what those 7 or 8 players out and the demands on our current group of players, I just don't think we're currently there to be able to do it at a high, high level, noting how fine the margins are, right? If you're slightly off your game at this stage, forget it. You can be undone by anyone. I just don't think we're there yet as a squad to be able to conquer that mountain. And I'm sure internally the club knows this as well. We've been intentionally building a squad with the caliber of challenging on multiple fronts. And I'm sure we're going to add to that and strengthen and learn from some mistakes this summer to have a full red hot crack at everything next season. And I'm very much hoping we do. However, for now, of course, we have a Champions League semi-final to look forward to that we are putting all chips into. I'm glad that we have this weekend off because certainly a few squad players can use it, and we can even hopefully allow the extra recuperation time for the likes of Marino, who's essential at the moment, White, who's much needed in the squad, Calafiori before his latest injury. It's been a few weeks now. I thought it was only a 2 or 3 week, but look, it's probably crept up beyond that now since the international break. But prior to that, he was an attacking weapon for us. I know it sounds odd to say bringing on a defender or left back, but he causes chaos. He gets shots on target. He's actually a good finisher. He really is a different dynamic that oppositions just haven't been able to handle sometimes. Like, what an attacking substitute he'd have up our sleeve to be able to say, hey, let's throw him on with 20 minutes to go, bring him on for Lewis Skelly or something like that, right, in a Champions League semi-final. He can cause a lot of damage. So one by one, we're missing key players at key times, and then the reliance is left to too few. So I'm almost 20 minutes in and I haven't even mentioned the goals. My apologies. I'm so glad for Kiwior that he got that moment. That was a fantastic reception he got. He really seemed to enjoy it and relish it. He really deserved that moment. It was a brilliant header. Like, I've loved some of the slow motion replays. He was the only one going for that ball. He climbs, he jumps, such a powerful header from that distance. And set piece FC is back. Woohoo! So it seems like it's been a while since we've scored from a direct set piece like that. I'm not talking about direct free kicks, of course, because Rice certainly delivered in spades in the first leg against Real Madrid. But a set piece header like that's fantastic. You know, it gives the opposition something else to worry about. I sure hope PSG were watching that and having them worried as well, because we've got that up our sleeve and it's just been some time since we've shown it. So well done to him. I'll cover the goals briefly. I'm sorry. I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling like I usually would to dissect the game moment by moment and half by half and following my usual structure. Eze was a fantastic goal. It really was brilliant, like a volley. Like you can only just stand up and applaud that brilliant finish. I will say that we also got slightly fortuitous with Trossard's goal. And when I first watched it, it looked like a clean left foot strike into the corner. However, it took a slight deflection that worked in our favour for once. And look, I actually thought we took a deserved lead at halftime, despite everything else I was saying about it's largely going through the motions. And it was a pretty flat atmosphere and flat performance. I think we deserve to be ahead 2-1 at halftime. In the second half, though, like things just started to there's some very unusual things that happened. And I've got to say, and I don't want to go in too hard on individual players. That's not really my thing that I do. However, as incredible as Raya has been, especially this season, It was unusual watching him as the match wore on. Like I've never seen him flap like that. Trust me, I've seen a lot of Arsenal keepers in my time look uncertain and lacking confidence and conviction and flapping at balls that they should otherwise be gobbling up. I never see it with Raya though. Anything that comes in his area, he's got brilliant hands, giant hands. He catches things cleanly. Like he doesn't fumble them, he catches them cleanly in one go, and then he's off looking to distribute. This was bizarre watching Raya. There was a patch of about 3 to 4 minutes when he had a few, just a few moments of just uncertainty-ness. I just don't know. He looked off his game as well. Can't go too hard on him from the goal though, his positioning, because that's, again, and I covered this in the Real Madrid match as well, that's the way we play, the way we play from the back. And Saliba, unfortunately, I think I said it at the Real Madrid podcast as well. Now that I think about it, that over the course of 12 to 18 months, when you play like this, in this sort of way, unfortunately, you're going to get your pocket picked. And it doesn't look good, does it, when it happens? It doesn't look great. You just hope that you can somehow get bailed out. But Saliba twice in a week and a bit, very, very unusual for him. And does he need a bit of a breather? Well, ideally, yes. But like I've just said before, when you look at the host of defensive injuries we've got, who else do we really have to bring in? And out of necessity, he needs to keep playing. So I'm not going to go too hard on him, unfortunately, but it really just encapsulates Arsenal's season. We imploded out of nowhere. I thought, even though Palace probably deserved a point, and at times you can even argue they should have been ahead, from an excellent patch that they had on us, we couldn't get out of their press, and they were causing us a lot of trouble at the other end. Ryan made a couple of good saves actually to keep them out. As much as they deserved that, we too could have been ahead. There was an excellent exchange. Martinelli burst forward, lovely crossover to Saka, and it was beautifully saved by Henderson. First time left foot volley by Saka, point blank. We probably should have scored. And we should have been out of sight by then. And look, soon after that as well, there was that. It was bizarre watching. It was caught offside at the time, and it didn't look offside at all to me. I think Timber looked offside, but the linesman put his flag up. Then he's done really well to chase the ball, kick it back over. Henderson, speaking of flapping, like what was he doing? Like he looked like he barely even went for the ball. And it's looped over his head, and Martinelli's tucked it in basically on the goal line. Now, I actually think this goal should have stood. He flagged for offside, and it clearly was not offside. It was checked by VAR. It seemed, though, and I don't know why they didn't talk about this more live when it happened on the commentary, but it seemed like they ruled the goal out for it being out of play against the byline. Now, based, and we've been here, right? We've got a little bit of football-related trauma to this. We've been here. You don't have the technology to conclusively prove it was over the line. Based on that replay, like the angles can be very deceptive. It can be a bit of an optical illusion. It did not look entirely out to me. I don't know how you can conclusively say that ball was out, because remember the match against Newcastle when Willock played it. It looked just as out then as it did to me here. But again, they point to the fact that there's no conclusive evidence to say it was out. So in that instance, they just allowed it to be a goal and allowed it to be play on. But here they don't. Is that because the linesman flagged for offside to begin with, so it was already a chalked off goal and they didn't want to overturn? But how does that work? Because he ruled it out for offside, and the offside was proven to be void. Like, it was proven to be null and void because he was not offside. I just don't know. It's making my head hurt a little bit, right, trying to go through all these permutations and the way the rules work. It's like I'm talking calculus at the moment. I just don't know how it works. And however, when I look at the replays, how can you rule that goal out? To me, it was a genuine, legit goal. Now, had the stakes been different and the circumstances been different, and I'd feel much more aggrieved about this. But given the situation, given where Arsenal are placed in the league, it is what it is, and maybe that's why they didn't really talk about it too much more. Because I genuinely would like to know what the proper explanation on that is, on that decision. But anyway, it was ruled out and they scored soon after. Excellent finish from Mateta, who really changed the game when he came on. He caused chaos. And we tried. We had a few moments at the other end. I wish Martinelli, he just lost balance at the key moment. I wish he played the ball across to Saka, who was there. You saw Saka throw his hands up straight away when the ball sliced off Martinelli's left foot, unfortunately, and just went out against the side netting. That was a great chance to win it. It came off the back of a fantastic throw-in, like a long throw-in, very, very, very savvy. I think it was Tierney who saw the gap, who saw the space and played it quickly. And we should have done better in that situation. But once again, it is what it is. It finished 2-2, and I'm not sure we can complain too much about the overall result given the performance. So all eyes, of course, turn to the Champions League, which I'll be back on again soon, too, to talk about more in depth. And once we hear about where certain players are positioned in terms of their recovery and availability. Before I sign off, though, before the match, there was an Ornstein tweet regarding Thomas Partey. And I must say, I don't feel great about this. It's a contentious discussion point for a number of reasons, off-field and legal reasons as well. And my reaction is that it took me by surprise, because in recent press conferences, what's been interesting is that Arteta has been asked by the journalists a number of times about the position on Thomas Partey and Jorginho, both of whom their contracts are due to expire at the end of this season. It's largely believed that Jorginho will go, I think, going back to Brazil when his contract expires. And I largely expected the same with Partey, because when Arteta's asked about it, he says things like, you'll need to check with Andrea Berta about that, which, look, to be honest, Mikel, we all know we're not going to hear that, because Arteta is the figurehead of the club. It's not like anyone else openly and consistently speaks or makes themselves available to press in press conferences. So how exactly is someone going to ask Andrea Berta, right? But anyway, all jokes aside, I think he was just trying to defer the answer and just try and deflect that way. And then when he was asked, he just says, look, my intention is clear. All right. But again, like, well, what's the intention? The intention to keep him or the intention to not? So that ambiguity, I just took it to read what we all largely expected, that Arsenal and Partey will come to a natural conclusion this summer, because his contract runs out and I know he's had an excellent season and he's been largely fit and available this season, which has caught many by surprise, including me, given his injury record. But it was an excellent natural time to part ways and us to invest in a younger, more fit version of him, because I believe he's 32 now, right? And I'm not sure it'll be a wise decision to on his salary as well to renew him and offer him an extension. So I was caught very much by surprise. I'm quite against it. I don't believe it's something we should be participating in. And yeah, I'm just surprised. Yeah, I'm quite surprised by this news, and it remains to be seen what happens from here. Maybe the decision will be taken out of Arsenal's hands, because I do believe he has a number of suitors from back in Spain and elsewhere across Europe, and at his age, he'd be looking for a big final contract, right? Maybe he's looking for a term of 2 to 3 years, which Arsenal, I think it'll be very irresponsible to offer someone of that age and injury record anything near those terms. So maybe the decision will be taken out of Arsenal's hands and he'll find a better deal elsewhere. But yeah, but from an Arsenal point of view, I'm quite surprised and disappointed to hear this. So let's wait and see what happens, and let's wait for more developments on that. In the meantime, thank you again for everyone for listening, for tuning in. Thank you so much for all the feedback. If you could please consider liking and subscribing if you're watching on YouTube, or leave me a review on your podcast platform, please. It'll be most welcome and most appreciated. And I'll be back on again to talk more as we build up to the Champions League semi-final next week. So thank you again. Thank you so much. Look after yourselves. Stay well, stay safe. I will always, of course, as like I always say, come on, Arsenal.